Thank you for joining us. We do have Joseph Stiglitz for the next 30 minutes on the line with us. We're going to go to break in just a moment and come back with him. A brief biography of Joseph Stiglitz. Of course, he's a best-selling author. He's also known as one of the chief economist at the World Bank. In 1995, they did a report of the Intergovernmental Panel, and he won the 2007 Nobel Peace Prize. He was also part of a panel with the Nobel Prize in Economics for his analysis of markets with asymmetric information. So he'll be with us for the next 30 minutes. In fact, let's go ahead and just introduce him now. We're about to go to break in one moment. But my sir, a lot has happened since you were last on with us 6 months ago.
Yeah, I'll say. It was a little bit predictable, though, and in fact, I probably, if you asked me, I would have said that I did not think the turmoil was over, and that I think it's going to go on for another year, year and a half, 2 years, the economic slowdown.
Well, we did ask you that, and you did say 2 to 3 years, going from memory, and that it would deepen. Did you think it would deepen this fast?
You can't predict exactly when these kinds of events happen. Yes, I actually did think it would be happening, I'd say roughly around now. I mean, basically what's been happening is the cumulative effects, house prices have continued to fall. That means more defaults. That means more, financial institutions are in deep problems. You know, you can paper things over for a while, but eventually you have to face reality.
Well, stay there, sir. We're going to skip this break for the InfoWars.com and PrisonPlanet.tv viewers with Joseph Stiglitz. For everybody else, we'll be right back. Okay, Mr. Stiglitz, let's continue. I was just breaking up for some stations that left us. And let's make sure and talk about your new book also before you leave us today, because that ties into all of this. Why were you... 5, 6, 7 years ago, talking about, and I remember first interviewing you about 6 years ago, you were bringing up the fact that there was no accountability, that they were leveraging these asset-backed securities, these debt-backed securities. I remember 4 years ago, you came on the show, you were talking about problems with mortgages and the real estate bubble in the United States. I mean, why were you talking about this years and years before anybody else was really talking about it?
Well, the problem is that much of the news, much of the views on what's going on in the financial markets comes from those who are making money out of the financial markets. So if you were, you know, one of the people in Lehman Brothers, one of the people in AIG, you're going to be talking up the economy. You're going to say how wonderful the thing is. Go buy my shares. And in fact, the head of Lehman Brothers, last April, was quoted as saying, you know, we've turned the corner. The economy is, you know, is on the uptick. And the same thing goes for the president, and the secretary of treasury. They've been saying that. They not only they've been telling American people, they've been going around the world. I talked to senior government officials, all over the world, and they said, you know, we just had a private meeting with the Secretary of Treasury, and he said, you've turned the corner. And I said, don't you believe it? The fact is that they're involved in salesmanship. As an academic, you know, I'm trying to figure out what is really going on. And unfortunately, what I saw was really going on was not very good.
In layman's terms, for the average folks out there and for myself, what is going on? What did you see that was happening that really raised red flags for you?
Well, there were several things. Let me just pick up one that's related to my book that's just coming out on the $3 trillion war. There were something very peculiar things about the financing of this war and the relationship between the war and the economy. This is the first war in America's history that has been totally financed on the credit card. That even as we went into the war, we had a big deficit, and yet the president asked for a tax cut for upper-income Americans.
It's also the first preemptive war, just where they've done nothing and we go in.
That's right. It clearly was a war of choice.
Stay there. We're going to join some stations. I want you to start back over about a minute ago and go over your new book, The $3 Trillion War. Here we go.
On the GCN Radio Network.
We're speaking with Joseph Stiglitz. He is a Nobel Prize winner. In fact, he's been involved in several Nobel Prizes here, if I read his bio correctly. And when he's been kind enough to come on the show, this is probably out of sixth or seventh visit of the last 7 years or so. And we bring you the economists who have been right. We don't bring you the economists who've been wrong, the ones they like to put on TV all the time. No, you're on television sometimes, but it's about 90% disinfo, in my opinion. You were getting into the red flags you saw years ago and then going into this war and why you've been ringing the alarm bells about really serious financial problems. So please continue.
Well, what I was saying is that there are several things, both about the war and the way that it was financed, that should have been a cause of concern. This was the first. This was a war of choice. This is a preemptive war. This is a war that as we went to war, we had a huge deficit, and yet the president asked for a tax cut. You know, usually, when you go to war, you ask your young men and women to go risk their lives, and then there's a sense of shared sacrifice. And the only sacrifice the president asked was for people to go down to the shopping malls. And there was actually a tax cut for upper-income Americans. Well, the piling up of debt has meant that should a problem occur, and a problem has now occurred, there would be less room for maneuver. We wouldn't be able to do anything. When we had an economic downturn back in 2001, we had a surplus of 2% of GDP. That gave us a lot of ammunition to use to try to remedy the problem. Now, this year, next year, we're expected to have the largest deficit in America's history. In 1 year, hitting $500 billion. Now, that's one problem. The second problem was that the war is, in my judgment, largely responsible for the increase in the price of oil. Was back in 2003, it was $23-$25 a barrel. Futures markets understood that there was going to be increases in demand from China, from other places, but they believed that there would be a concomitant increase in supply from the Middle East. The war changed that equation, and now we have oil $100 a gallon. Now, normally, if a country is spending so much more money abroad as we were, importing oil from Kuwait, from Saudi Arabia, from other countries, it's going to weaken the economy. But it didn't seem to be happening. And why? Well, some people said there was new laws of economics. Whenever anybody says that to me, I start getting suspicious. What was going on was very simple. The Fed decided to let forth a flood of liquidity, lax regulation. We got a housing bubble. The housing bubble led to a consumption boom. Savings in the United States went down to zero. It sustained the economy for a while, but we were living on borrowed money and borrowed time, and it was just a matter of time before something happened. And so when I looked at what was going on, how the economy continued in spite of the high oil prices, in spite of the war, it was clear to me, and I saw the housing bubble, and I saw what was happening to savings rate. It was, you didn't have to be a genius to say that there were problems around the corner.
In fact, I saw that number in January of 2007, that it was the highest debt ratio for the average American and lack of savings rate, both, since the depths of the Great Depression. In fact, it was worse than late 1933.
That's right. I mean, and that by itself should have been a sign of a problem. But there were even other signs. Housing prices were getting higher and higher as part of this bubble. But most Americans' income were stagnating. In fact, median income adjusted for inflation was declining. And again, you don't have to be a genius to say, look at, Americans can't spend more and more if their incomes are going down more and more on housing, if their incomes are going down and down. This was a pyramid. this was a house of cards. And the banks, in spite of the fact that the housing prices were getting so out of line, increased the fraction of the value of the house that they were willing to lend against. And they were actually having loans where you didn't even have to pay the interest on the loan.
Just incredible. Now, expanding from there, where do you see this going? I mean, how do you see the government, the Treasury, the private Federal Reserve, you know, this whole international order dealing with this? Because I've seen Financial Times of London articles saying, look, other contractions, other speculation bubble implosions have been manageable and have even been some opportunities for people that weren't in debt and people that did save, both the local level or the international level. You know, it didn't matter where you were geopolitically. Now, they're talking about this being a financial black hole that, if it continues, might even make the Treasury become insolvent. I mean,
well, this is clearly the most serious problem since the Great Depression, and in some ways worse in terms of the financial institutions. The reason, in part, is that while some of the same problems that have occurred then and have occurred since then, excessive leverage, pyramid schemes, bubbles, have happened before, the so-called innovation of Wall Street, the financial innovations, created, it was supposed to manage risk, it created risk, and created a kind of non-transparency that is so great that no one knows exactly what the magnitude, what the nature of the risk they face.
In fact, that's now coming out where these companies say, we can't show you your books, we don't even really have them. I mean, it's just, you know, the companies are saying they can't extrapolate how these algorithms are even working, what these computer systems are doing, who owns what debt, how it was leveraged.
Exactly, and that's why no one trusts anybody else. You can't, who wants to buy Lehman Brothers when you don't know what its liabilities
are?
Well,
that's my question, because you won one of your two Nobel Prizes for coming up with these asymmetrical models or looking at certain strata, something they hadn't done. So you're an expert on this.
Exactly. And you know, what I cautioned about, I wrote about these problems of asymmetric information, the fact that some people know things that others don't know. But this is, in some ways, a double problem, because not only do others not know, say, what Lehman Brothers may know, Lehman Brothers doesn't know what it ought to know.
Which makes it even harder to say, if you have a fire, no one has the full blueprint of even the building.
Exactly. And so that's where we are in this crisis. And that, of course, means that no one's willing to lend to anybody else, and that, of course, restricts credit.
So we have a crisis of trust, not just with the public and the banks, but with the institutions themselves, which sounds like the just about as bad a scenario.
It's particularly bad because, you know, our financial institutions are based on trust. I mean, you put your money in the bank, and you trust that you can get your money out. If you didn't trust that, you would never put your money in the bank. So trust is absolutely essential for the functioning of our financial markets, functioning of our economy. And then there's another level of trust. You know, outsiders, those in other countries, have to have trust that the American economy is working well. They have to have trust that when the president says everything is going well, it is. Well, this administration has really burned that trust. You know, the president said, oh, there's no problem, just a few too many houses been built. Well, if that's the level of analysis that the leader of the United States is giving about what the nature of economic problems, no wonder everybody around the world is losing a certain amount of confidence.
Well, in fact, in the past, if a president said all is good, the market would go up. Now, if McCain or even Obama or even Bush, anyone seen as a leader, says, you know, we're going to make it out of this, it's okay, markets go down, which shows almost a terminal loss of trust. Now, going back to this asymmetric data, where you know, people can't see around the tree to the other side to see what's on the other side of it, I mean, projecting forward, which you've really been good at, where do you see this going? How do you see this on the good side unfolding versus on the bad side unfolding?
Well, there's always some uncertainty about what the government is going to do, and I have to say that the uncertainty has increased because there's clearly now an additional element of uncertainty where the government's saying we're going to pick winners, we're going to decide who we bail out and who not, and so if you have your money in the wrong firm, you won't get bailed out. Boy, is that scary to people outside, because they're now making not only an economic bet, they're making a political bet on who's friends of the Bush administration or the Fed, and what their judgment about whether there's systemic risk.
Well,
or
let
not.
Me ask you, who are those friends? Is it Chase Manhattan, Citibank, Bank of America?
Well, we don't really know. What we do know, for instance, question, why was it that we bailed out Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac? One story that one hears is that there were a lot of investors abroad, some with close connections with one of the firms that the Secretary of Treasury was at before. And so there, you know, the rumors that may have played an important role in the decision to bail out Fannie Mae.
The Saudis and the Chinese, right?
Exactly. So the question is, you know, is this being done for the American economy? How would American taxpayers feel that if the reason they put billions and billions of their money at risk was to help some people that in other countries, not to help with American economy? Well, of course, they're always going to say, if we lose the confidence in the American economy, where will we be? But we've lost that confidence.
Joseph Stiglitz, because we've only got you another 10 minutes, I'm going to skip this break and the final break. We're going to ride up to about 32 after with you. So we will continue. Some stations will not carry this, but others will. And you can go to Infowars.com and pick it up as well. Here we go with Joseph Stiglitz, two-time Nobel Prize winner. Now. Okay, yeah, this is so important, I want to continue. Now, I don't consider myself technical or to, you know, be some economic whiz kid, but I do read what you write. I do read what, hundreds of others say, because this is so important, obviously. But let's go down from the level of knowledge, say, I have, somebody who's somewhat informed, down to just very simple. I understand people listen to you, so you've got to be very technical and explain out why you're saying what you're saying. But just in layman's terms, and I was asking, what's the good side, what's the bad side? I mean, what do you, from past research, from seeing what's going on now, I know so much of this is secret that you're saying, you know, I can't see through a brick wall, but I mean, your best dead reckoning, where do you see us in 12 months, 18 months?
I see certainly over the next 12 months the basic pattern that we've seen for the last 12 months continuing. House prices will continue to fall. More mortgages will go into foreclosure. The value of more and more houses will be less than the mortgages. More firms will face more financial firms will be put into crisis. Some hedge funds will.
How deep? I mean, we're now hearing them not say 100 banks, but 1,000 banks, you know, on CNBC. I mean,
it's hard to predict, as I say, because there's such non-transparency in what's been going on. But I don't think it's, I just very hard to know. It could be, certainly in the dozens of banks.
Do you think it's more rotten than you previously thought as we kick in more doors and see what's behind, you know, deeper levels?
It is a little bit more rotten than I had originally thought. But, you know, one aspect of what has been going on is everybody realized that there were what they called trillions of dollars in open positions where people were betting against other people. And you had to ask the question, what were they doing? Who were they betting against? They said that they were trying to manage risk, but what risk were they trying to manage? And, why do some people think that they were smarter than other people, that they knew that the exchange rate was going to go up or exchange rate was going to go down, interest rates go up or interest rate goes down. Now, what you know is when you have a lot of people making such big bets and you have a lot of volatility in the economy, there are going to be some big winners and there are going to be some big losers.
And there's also, you can follow back who the consistent winners are and find out who's getting illegal inside information.
And that may be playing a role. In some of this, though, there's no inside information about where the exchange rate is going to go. There may be some inside information about bailouts and things like that. That is clear.
Or commodities.
The point I want to make, though, is that given the level of volatility, there are going to be more firms that more financial institutions that are going to be in deep trouble, and given the lack of transparency, there's going to be hard to get liquidity, and so I think we can see more problems ahead. What I am particularly worried though about what I call the real economy.
That's what I wanted to bring up when we come back to the full audience, and I want to plug your book here in the 5 minutes we have left. We're about at half our audience here. I just skipped the breaks because some stations and the internet certainly likes that. But that was my next question, was we can talk all day about these big financial institutions. The real economy does not look good to me, and I'm in the supposedly best city in the U.S., Austin, Texas. There's restaurants closing, houses for foreclosure. The sheriff's out grabbing people's houses. Here we go. Well, he's a two-time Nobel Prize winner. He's won one for economics and for peace. And you don't usually win two. He's Joseph Stiglitz. His new book is coming out, The $3 Trillion War, The True Cost of the Iraq Conflict. And I want to spend a few minutes on that before he leaves us. But he brought up, just now for those listening at InfoWars.com, not on the M&FM, he just brought up my next question. He said, I want to talk about the cost on the real economy. And that was my next question. I'm in supposedly this great city of Austin for the economy compared to the rest of the country. Foreclosures everywhere. My dad yesterday driving around saw sheriffs outside three houses pulling people out, repossessing them forcibly. Restaurants I've gone to years, I pull into one, it's closed. I pull into another, it's closed. Stuff shutting down. I mean, the real economy is just getting worse and worse. Meanwhile, Bush is going around, when gas was $4 a gallon, saying, no, it's not. And there's just this let them eat cake, even from the Democrats in Congress.
That's right. And it's going to get worse. I mean, basically, when the financial system starts getting weak, it is in a position to provide credit, to provide loans, to provide mortgages, and that means in turn that housing prices are going to go fall further, businesses are going to contract, unemployment is going to grow, and it's a downward vicious cycle.
A snowball.
It's a snowball, and that's where we are. We eventually will emerge from it. We've emerged from every other downturn, so I don't want to be excessively pessimistic, but you have to be in fantasy land to say everything is fine. And even to say that we have turned the corner. I think we are in, still in the downward phase of, this, economic cycle.
We're going into a deepening storm. How much longer does your, expertise?
I would say that we should not anticipate emerging from this for a year and a half or longer. So this is going to be, this is a different kind of economic downturn from most of those that we've had in the last 75 years. Most of those are, we call it inventory cycles, businesses accumulate a little bit too much inventory.
It's generated from the bottom. This crisis is generated from the top.
Exactly. And it's systemic. It's not just a little excess investment, a little bit, too high interest rates. It's basically in the basic institutions of our economy, the financial institutions, and it's going to be a high, difficult road getting out, and it's particularly difficult because for the last 5 years, especially as the war has gone on, we've been a debt economy.
Go back into that, because I interrupted you with a break earlier about your book, The Facts You're Laying Out, The $3 Trillion War. Folks need to get it and read it. What we're dealing with here, why so many fundamentals have been changed.
That's right. I mean, as I mentioned, this is the first war that we have put totally on the credit card. In fact, it's the first war since the Revolutionary War that we had to turn to foreigners to finance. because 40% of our national debt is now being financed by foreigners. We had to borrow $850 billion in recent years, per year, from foreigners. Here we have the richest country in the world that can't live within its means. Households have been borrowing at an unprecedented level. We mentioned before that national savings rate, the household savings rate was the lowest since the Great Depression. And the federal government has been piling up debt because it's been borrowing not only to finance the war, but to finance its other operations. So with all that debt, and at the same time, the financial institutions which manage the debt having such trouble, we are in trouble as an economy.
Now, you're saying the biggest financial threat since the Great Depression, maybe even bigger. Is there some internal bank warfare going on, people using the lack of confidence, using connections to go and basically sabotage and overtake? In the case of Bear Stearns down to $2, which clearly that was an overreaction in my humble opinion, and then going and taking that over. I mean, is any of this also market forces inside Wall Street using this to their advantage?
Well, part of the problem is, as I said before, that there is such lack of transparency that it does give anybody who has some inside information a big advantage over others. But you mentioned that you thought $2 may have been too low for Bear Stearns, but the fact of the matter is we, the taxpayers, do not know yet, months after the bailout, how much we are at risk for that bailout.
Now, that's another point, is we don't know what we're signing on to. We know it's trillions altogether, but I mean, so it's a time bomb. We just got about 2 minutes left with Joseph Stiglitz for folks listening exclusively at InfoWars.com and some of the stations that carry it, and then he'll be hopefully back with us in the future as things unfold, because he's one of the most important guests on the subject that we could hope to have, and we're very thankful to have him. The new book is The $3 Trillion War, The True Cost of the Iraq Conflict. Mr. Stiglitz, I'm going to let you go here in just about 2 minutes, but I wanted to ask you about some solutions. You know, you put forward quite a few ideas to keep this from happening. Now that's a little late. We're now into this happening. I mean, if you were the economic, you know, king for a day, if you were both the Fed chairman and the Treasury Secretary, which kind of Paulson really is, he's telling the Fed to do right now, that's been reported, what would you do right now to stabilize this, to build confidence back in, and to stop the implosion?
Well, the first thing the economy needs, I go back to the real economy, and it needs a stimulus. But it needs a stimulus that really works. And so we have to increase aid to states and local governments who are facing a big shortfall of revenue, and they're going to cut back expenditures, cut back investment, cut back basic programs for Americans. We need stronger unemployment insurance. With unemployment growing, we need to have some confidence that if you lose your job, no fault of your own, that you're a little bit better protected than we've been. We need more investment in our infrastructure. Anybody who visits an airport in Asia, Europe, you realize what state our airports are in. New Orleans levees, the Minnesota bridges are all emblematic of what has happened to our infrastructure. So I would take this advantage of this particular time to try to stimulate the economy in ways that provide the basis of our longer-term economic growth. If our economy is growing, then we will be better able to manage some of this financial turmoil. But if our economy is going, as I believe it's going to go, into a downward direction, it's going to be much more difficult to manage. And the problem is the president is still talking about everything being fine in the economy.
Well, that's my final question. It doesn't appear that they're really planning to change any of the fundamentals that have brought us to this point. They continue to say full speed ahead, onward through the fog. A, do you agree with that statement, that that's what they're doing? And B, what will that then lead to?
Well, it's clear that they've not taken into account, they didn't anticipate these problems, and they're not responding to the problems. Partly because the problems are of their own making, and they want to hide their head in the sand and say, oh, everything is fine. Our recipe, tax cuts for the rich, deregulation, let markets run wild, is the recipe for long-term economic growth and stability. They've been proven very, very wrong.
Mr. Stiglitz, we're going to let you go in about 60 seconds, but I want to come back to the full audience right now and plug your personal website. I forgot to do that. Here we go.
Alex Jones Show, because there's a war on for your mind.
Well, we've kept him a little bit longer than he originally was coming on. I hope you get him for a full hour in the near future.
Love to do that.
JosephStiglitz.com, STIGLITZ, but the great part about Google, if you misspell Joseph Stiglitz, you'll still get his website. So josephstiglitz.com, and he's written quite a few best-selling books. The new one's just been out for a few months. The most recent book, The $3 Trillion War, The True Cost of the Iraq Conflict.
The paperback just came out with a new afterword trying to keep us, bring us up to date.
Oh, so just a brand new one just came out then.
That's right. Bring us up to date on what's happened since the last edition came out.
Well, we appreciate all your time. Anything that I didn't bring up or anything you didn't bring up?
No, it was good discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Stiglitz. Take care.
Thank you.